Now, our After Three story today begins back in 1941 and the dark days of the Second World War. It was all hands to the pump, of course, and one organisation that needed support was the Air Force, hence the formation of the Air Cadets. Well, 70 years on, the organisation is still going strong. There are 12 units in Berkshire alone at Newbury, Tadley, Burfield, Reading, Early, Woodley, Wokingham, Bracknell, Maidenhead, Slough, Windsor and Britwell, and a national membership of 43,000. Mark Trevina from Reading was a cadet and went on to work for the organisation for a further 22 years so far, because he's still at it, and he's my guest today. Hello, Mark, nice to meet you.
Hello, Bill. Thanks so much for having us in.
That's okay. Let's go right back to the beginning then. What assistance did the air cadets provide?
Well, if you look back to the Second World War, they were trying to get Bomber Command up to 115,000 people, and they desperately needed well-trained young people, not only trained in aviation as in flying, but also engineering. And there'd been a pre-runner to our organisation, but they needed to grow and grow bigger. So that's when they formed us, and we got up to about 250,000 our size during the war, as a pre-entry organisation. We're not that anymore, but at the time that's why we were formed.
And what age range was it?
Then it was 15 upwards, and it's funny when you look back at old pictures, 15 then looks like about 25 now, but it was just 15 to about 18, and then they would join the regular Royal Air Force.
Yeah, it's funny because you're quite right, 15 then looks like 25 now, but in terms of maturing, people used to take longer to do so. So, I mean, 15-year-olds were only just stopping being little boys, really, and here they were plunged into pretty serious work, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're at the moment middle of making a film, and we've just come now from Dunsfold Park, you know, where they filmed Top Gear.
Oh, yeah.
And as an ex-cadet from Reading who set up a museum down there, opens it every Wednesday. Mm. And it was just amazing to hear his story about how he grew up. He grew up in Reading, and at the age of 15, his mum and dad said they were going to go and live in a workhouse, and they farmed the children out, and from there he had, you know, quite a desperate time of it. He was a machine worker for a while before he joined the Air Force. Mm. So yeah, you are right, they're really different times back then.
So the cadets in the Air Force were his saviour, really. Gave him a family, gave him a reason to carry on, gave him a career, everything.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know, talking today, it was the very core of his life.
Yeah. What did they actually do? I mean, they didn't fly aeroplanes at the age of 15, surely, did they?
Back then, no. Now we do.
Yeah. But what were they doing in the war?
Back then, it was a mixture, really. We had the forerunner of the computer. We had a synthetic trainer, so it wasn't a computer back then, obviously, but it was a bellows and all that sort of stuff, called a link trainer, and amazing contraption. You occasionally see them in museums. They used to learn to fly on that, so wow. A couple of cadets used to sit inside, and they used to have all these wires trailing out, so they could learn the basic rudimentary skills. But one of the other things they did was they learned engineering skills, so soldering, engine work, you know, to a really high standard, and the precursor of, you know, today we have adult learning, you know, in the evenings. The cadet forces were the precursor of that. That was all laid on during the war to get these people up to speed in the skills they'd need to serve in the air forces.
They weren't flying bombing missions at the age of 15, but they were often in the planes, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. As another gentleman, I'm going to speak to him in the next couple of weeks, from Maidenhead, and he flew with the Air Transport Auxiliary, which were over at White Waltham, so right in the Berkshire patch. Yeah. And he told me he got hundreds of hours, and basically what they would do is they'd make a Lancaster, fly into White Waltham, and then they would he would be the pilot's assistant, so he'd have a pilot. Mm. And he or she would fly the aircraft to have the guns fitted or the radio fitted or thing calibrated before they flew it to frontline squadron. Right. And of course, a big aircraft like that, you can't fly it with one person, so the cadets used to go along. This cadets from Maidenhead Squadron, there was 30 of them, used to do it, not as a job, but they used to do it full time. They used to go along and be pilot's assistants.
Wow,
as well. And the other things they used to do over there, they used to do fire watch for the airfield. They managed a VIP visit when George VI came and visited. Absolutely fantastic days.
If they were up there with the pilot and he had a heart attack, would they be able to take over?
I don't know. I really don't. Crikey. I mean, they certainly, you know, the cadets who'd had training on this link trainer, they'd been able to do something.
You'd certainly have a go, wouldn't you, anyway, if the guy next to you suddenly keeled over, that's for sure.
Goodness me,
you'd have a go at it, yeah. Very interesting also that you mentioned that girls and boys, because it wasn't until the 1980s that girls were allowed to join the air cadets, but you're saying in the war, they were.
Oh, no, sorry, I misunderstood me. It's for the Air Transport Auxiliary. They had male and female pilots. pilots.
Ah, right.
And it that was just amazing because they were flying these aircraft from the factories to the frontline units unarmed. Mm. So if they got set upon, they had no way of defending themselves. Yeah, we took girls in the ATC from 1981.
Yes, yeah. So back going back to the war again, many of them would have perished just like other soldiers and pilots and so forth.
Yeah, it's very sad. I mean, Bomber Command is just an example. That was about 110,000 people strong. Wow. During the war, and half of them lost their lives. Very, very sad. And of the remainder, about 10,000 were prisoners of war, and another 10,000 were injured. So you think of your rate of getting through that is very slim.
Very brave people, yeah. I'm Bill Buckley, and he is Mark Trevena, telling us about the Air Cadets. He was a cadet himself, and he's now spent over 20 years volunteering for them. We got up sort of more or less to the end of the Second World War, really. Why did the organisation need to continue after hostilities had ceased?
There was a huge debate in 1945, you should imagine. You know, we were 250,000 cadets. Yeah. And, you know, where we were going to go. But in the end, the government of the day decided it was going to continue, but in a smaller size. And that's kind of really led us up to where we are now. We're about 43,000 now.
Right.
We are trying to grow. We're still trying to grow up to 50,000 because we're so vital to what the Air Force does. You know, about 10% of our cadets join up and join all three forces, or four if you include the Royal Marines. And we also put a really strong light blue footprint on the streets.
Yeah. Would a lot of that 250,000 not have wanted it to have come to an end? Would it have been a difficult time for people, that?
It was. I mean, from what I've read and what I've talked to people, it's a real transition in our history. And a lot of things changed at that point. So we did lose a lot of cadets automatically, just because it came to the end of the war, because a lot of youngsters joined the Air Training Corps because it was not an easier ticket, but it was a more reliable ticket to join the Royal Air Force than to join the Army or the Royal Navy. So we did reduce anyhow, but, you know, and from there, you know, once the government of the day had the confidence in us, we've just grown and grown and grown.
I suppose it all depended whether those at the time saw it as the start of a lifelong career or saw it as doing their war work, and now the war was over, they could go back to being, I know, artists or bus drivers or whatever their original plan was, perhaps, would it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was like with Reg today. I was talking to the guy who runs the museum over at Dunsfold. He worked in a brick factory in Reading. Mm. Then he decided he was going to sign up for the Royal Air Force, decided he wanted to be a mechanic, joined up, did 6 years of that. And when he came out, he went back to civilian career and ended up working for Reading Borough Council.
Yeah. Well, war is a terrible thing, and we would never wish it to happen, but it is an ill wind, including war, isn't it? And many people got opportunities to transform their lives, really, for the better, because they were taught skills that suddenly they were needed for. And you think about women in the war, the opportunities that women had, having been chained up to the kitchen sink beforehand, even if they were only doing a mundane job, it seems to me, they suddenly, you know, got into the man's world and enjoyed all the benefits that men had previously kept for themselves.
Yeah, it's a huge change. And certainly through the history projects I'm working on at the moment for our 70th anniversary, it's brought up all sorts of things that I didn't ever know or expect. You know, for example, people rarely talked about the Great War in between the two wars. And also the rise of Germany in the 30s wasn't talked about. I mean, I talked to a gentleman from Reading recently, and he said he's more interested in what the Royals were doing than what was happening in Germany.
Probably quite a common view, I'd imagine, at the time, yeah. Talk me through the decades, then. We're into the, say the 50s now, really, aren't we? How did it go through the 50s, 60s, 70s?
We shrunk down. They put us under what was then Royal Air Force Reserve Command over at Maidenhead, at the airfield there at White Waltham. And really, not an awful lot changed.
Yeah. Shrunk to what sort of level?
To around the 40,000-50,000.
To about where you are now?
Yeah, so about a fifth of the size. Okay. And nothing really hugely changed until the late 60s, when they took another really good look at what we did, and they changed what we did, because we were still set up for what we were doing in the war, which was basically a pre-entry organisation. Yeah. And that's certainly something we aren't today. And
was it decided you should be instead, then?
We're really, it's a real modern word to say, but an engagement tool with the community for the armed forces. So we're now a key part of the RAF youth engagement strategy.
What does that mean?
So we're the light blue footprint on the street. If your son or daughter joined us, you know, later on when they're in a job, say they don't join the Air Force, they'll know about the Air Force, they'll know about the armed forces, so that they can make decisions based on that.
And this is funded how?
We're a mix of funding. We have some funding for government, and I know, you know, in the environment we're in at the minute, it sounds a little strange doing like that. But we're a very cheap organisation because we also have funding. The cadets pay some subscriptions, and our local units.
People like you are free because you're volunteers.
Yeah, exactly. We're free. I get some allowances, but generally I'm pretty cheap. Yeah. That sounds awful to say, doesn't it? Yeah. But and we also have local civilian committees. So a little bit like your PTA in a school, we also have them, and they raise an awful lot of funds for us because we don't get funded for everything. So if a squadron wants a minibus, the cadets have got to go out there and do backpacking or car washes or whatever to make the money for it.
I'm guessing at certain times it would be easier to recruit than at others based on the sort of prevailing social attitudes of the day. I mean, for example, in the late 60s when it was all love and peace, man, and growing your hair long and dropping out. I can't imagine any military or even quasi-military organisation would be very attractive to young people then, whereas perhaps today more so?
I don't know. I mean, I was a cadet in the 70s myself when you either had to be a punk, a mod or a skinhead.
Yeah.
And
were you considered a bit geeky or...?
Geeky, yeah. And I don't know, but you know, certainly there's a few of us who are different, but if you take a local squadron, so you in Reading, we've got about 100 cadets, so that's in Reading, in Brock Barracks, in Early at the University, and Woodley. We've got about 100 cadets. So if you take that amongst our catchments, a very small percentage. So we generally find people who want to be air-minded or want to do
they'll
something.
They'll get to you whatever the attitude of the time.
And also, yeah, we're a very broad church where you have a lot of organisations, a very single activity focus. Mm. We do a whole bunch of exciting stuff.
Talking to Mark Trevina from Reading, who was an air cadet for 4 years and has gone on to volunteer for the organisation for a further 22. And he's telling us the story of how it's developed over the years. And we've done the 50s and the 60s. We've mentioned the start of girls joining in the 1980s briefly. I guess that was a major change for any organisation, wasn't it? Suddenly to be both genders, not just the one.
It was a huge change. I mean, before that, the girls had their own organisation. I mean, I can hardly believe even saying that, to be honest, that there was two separate organisations.
We forget how much times change until we look back at them, actually. Yeah, it's true.
But it's made the organisation so much better in so many ways. And today, you know, you wouldn't. It's a no divisions at all.
Of course not.
You know,
why would there be? Yeah.
You know, any gender, any religion. And you know, the cadets also, a mix of... you know, really well off and not so well off, and they once they've got their blue uniform on, it doesn't matter who they are, where they come from, they're all cadets together.
Amazed at the range of stuff that your young people do. Why would something like music or canoeing come under your auspices?
We do a whole bunch of stuff, like you say, we do the flying and gliding and all the stuff you'd expect, like weeks to RAF
camp. But why
camp.
The stuff we don't expect? What's canoeing or music got to do?
Well, music, obviously, we've got marching bands. We've got, in the Thames Valley, we've got three bands which go out and play at community events, march in front of parades. But canoeing is part of a quite broad mix of adventure training. And
this is all character building stuff, is that the idea?
Yeah, you don't have to do drill on a parade square to change somebody. You can also learn about yourself adventure training, whether it be doing Duke of Edinburgh Ward, doing fieldcraft, climbing, canoeing, abseiling, whatever it is. And we do a whole bunch, and we've got staff who are fully trained in it to provide it safely. And the cadets love it. We've got a whole bunch going away to Adventure Dolphin up at Pangbourne this weekend. They're going climbing, canoeing and low rope coursing this weekend, and they just adore it.
Tell me your own story. Why did you become a cadet?
Well, we always say, when we're talking to the cadets and we want to make squadrons bigger, we say, bring a friend along. So this is what happened. One of my friends brought me along to a squadron and promptly left the next night.
Oh, right.
So I was...
And you hadn't previously thought about it?
No, he just said, oh, come and have a go. It's brilliant fun. So I joined, and this was in 1979. And, you know, we were in the grip of the Cold War right back then. Our nearest RAF station was RAF St Morgan. They used to fly the maritime reconnaissance aircraft out of, so we were quite close to the Air Force. And I did all sorts of brilliant stuff. Not as much as we do today, I don't think, but I did my flying. I flew in a Chipmunk. Which is kind of a 1949 era two-seat aircraft. I flew in a glider that was kind of little more than sort of balsa wood and canvas stuck around it. And all I remember is when it landed, it sounded like someone was beating a bass drum. You know, and I also did my Duke of Edinburgh Award, went on some amazing camps as well.
You're involved in two projects at the moment, looking back at the organisation, aren't you? Tell us about
Two projects, really. One looking forward and one looking back, really. We're trying to do two things. The first thing is we're trying to identify recent ex-cadets. When I say that, I mean from the 80s, 90s, and more recently. And then there may have been a cadet.
Is it specifically in Berkshire?
Nationwide.
But, so it's a nationwide project.
Yeah,
okay.
But I mean, I'm looking after it for Oxfordshire and Berkshire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that they left, they've started a career, they've started their family, and now they've got a few hours to spare during the week. We'd love to speak to them and tell them what we do today and see if they'd like to come back and join us.
Right, so it's to get them involved as volunteers. That I see. Because there's another project you're doing, you're actually making making a film?
Yeah, I'm making two films, actually. I'm making a history film, but I'm also making a talking history. And at the moment, we've written the script for the main film, which is got a grand title of the Air Training Corps, The History. Mm. And I'm also making a talking history as well, where I'm going around and talking to ex-cadets. I spoke on Friday to two in the New Forest who were cadets in the 1940s, in 1941. And I've spoken to a gentleman today. He was in the Home Guard during the war, at the start of the war, and then he joined the Royal Air Force, and he became a leader in the Reading area after the war. Mm. And I'm basically talking to get the history, right. Because...
What will happen to the finished works?
We're going to be making a training DVD for the cadets, and hopefully we'll put it online as well. We've got a couple of really, really good websites that have got kind of video hosting capabilities, so hopefully we'll put it on there as well.
How do people get hold of you if it applies to them?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way, if you're on the internet, is to look at us on the website. Got a really simple address, www.aircadets.tv.
Aircadets.tv, right, yeah, okay.
And that's a website which is a really brilliant website. And I've got a guy, a volunteer, who runs that for me, and he's absolutely fantastic.
Okay,
and
so if you go to there, it'll get you to you, and you can,
and
take
you can
part
find,
in your
projects. You can
projects.
Find out more about us, find out where we are, okay. and you can send us an email. You could also call us as well. We've got a little small-time hub, and we've got about 1,000 cadets, but we've only got 3 people who look after us full-time, and they're based up in Abingdon. And you can call them, and they're on 01235 547 990, and they're expecting the call, so it won't be a surprise.
In my experience, people never get phone numbers down ever, but they often get email addresses and website addresses down. So I think probably the former is the more productive.
All the details are on our website. So
aircadets.tv is the one that you need. And finally, why have you stayed with the organisation so long, Mark? What has it given you, apart from what it gave you when you were a cadet, you know, all the fun and the adventure and so forth? You didn't have to stay for another 22 years, but you did.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I mean, several reasons. One, I love seeing the cadets develop. You know, you get a 13-year-old join, maybe not certain about where they're coming from, and we can, you know, like we talked about the flying and the gliding and all that stuff, but we give them life training. So some real, like we'd call today, soft skills that you can't get anywhere else. And it's just brilliant to see a youngster join, not certain what they want to do, and then choose what it is. And like I said, only 10% join the Royal Air Force. So the 90% go on and do other stuff. And we point them in the right direction. Secondly, it's given me a whole bunch of skills that I've been able to use in real life.
What is real life, by the way?
At the moment, I'm on a bit of a sabbatical, but normally I'm in broadcast, so I sell into the broadcast industry normally.
Right. But
I'm having a few months off from that for this project.
Yes.
And it's given me the ability to talk.
Such as? What skills are we talking about?
You know, talking to people. So,
So using it now, are you?
Absolutely. But also, to bigger groups of people. I mean,
Excuse me, we've got thousands. We're a huge group of people.
I know you are. But you
it
know,
just
in,
doesn't
in,
feel like
in,
it.
In the room. No, it's radio feels so intimate.
It does.
But so you imagine if you've got 250 cadets' faces staring at you, waiting for you to utter that magical word. That's really transferable into the workplace. So learn all of that. Learn how to write better. And all so many soft skills that I've been able to use both ways. But overall, for me, it's just seeing those youngsters develop, joining you at 13, maybe not certain what they want to do in life, and leaving out the other end. Maybe they've only been with us 2 or 3 years, knowing what they want to do.
Very good. Thanks very much for talking to us today. The address, one more time, aircadets.tv. That was Mark Trevina.